It's another edition of the Falls Cast brought to you by the Falls Free Press in beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, where today, Tuesday, October 13th, it is, 60s. Pretty nice, actually. We are here with some of our favorite Falls casters. We have with us Bart Sullivan.
Hello.
And Patrick Catanese.
Hello.
And I am your moderator, Alex Hall. And I want to let you know that after our roundtable discussion today, we are going to have my interview with Cuyahoga Falls Community Development Director Diana Colavecchio, who has served in a lot of different public positions, including as Stowe Municipal Court Clerk of Courts and as a Cuyahoga Falls City Councilwoman as far back as 2005. So she's been around a while and has seen the city from a variety of perspectives. Even outside the city, working at Stowe Municipal Court, which serves Cuyahoga Falls, but serves a variety of other communities as well. And now is working as the community development director, which admittedly I thought was a lot more about trying to attract businesses to the city. And it is that, but, it's, a lot more than that. When people complain about their, neighbors, siding falling off their house or something like that, it's the community development director's office that they go to. And they actually have inspectors who go out and inspect those things on behalf of the city, which is not something I really knew about. So it was an interesting interview. And she talks about not only what her office does, but kind of tells her story, which she's kind of a trailblazer, honestly. She worked with some really influential lawyers when she was a lot younger, before she was a lawyer herself. And then she worked in private practice as a lawyer in addition to all these other positions. So it's a really cool interview, and we hope you guys will all stick around and listen to it. I also want to let you know that we at the Falls Free Press do continue to produce articles, believe it or not. We spend a lot of time on the Falls Cast, and we hope everybody's enjoying it. But if you head over to fallsfreepress.com, you can check out a variety of articles that we continue to produce. If you go there today, you'll be able to read about this Green City Councilman who's running for State House in District 36, which includes a big part of Cuyahoga Falls and is therefore the reason that we're covering this story. This guy has not one but two suspicious fires in the last 6 years, and the most recent one was actually suspected of having been arson, so much so that the Talmadge Fire Department filed a police report to that effect. It's all pretty shady stuff, and there's more details in the article right there on fallsfreepress.com. So go check that out and read all about it. That's our preamble. We can go ahead and jump into some of our stuff that we have to talk about for the week here. So the Cuyahoga Falls City School District has made progress on its plan to build a new 6th to 12th grade school campus, which is a project that was approved via last year's bond issue, which passed in the 2019 election. The state of Ohio had agreed to supply a portion of the funds needed to proceed with the project, but the state funds were delayed from the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission's Classroom Facilities Assistance Program because of COVID-19, like everything else. It's always the reason, COVID-19. And so as a result, the district asked to have the funds come out of the Expedited Local Partnership Program instead. And they were informed early last week that the request had been granted, which means that they're going to allow the district to avoid what may have been an additional 2 years of waiting for the funds that they needed to begin the project. So with the funds now available, the planning process, which itself could take 18 months to 2 years, can begin in earnest, and the district will now be able to hire an architect of record and a construction management team. They're actually already advertising for those positions, what qualifications they are going to be requiring for people to be able to apply for that that job. So what do you guys think? Are we excited about the new building project finally moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's about time that we
move forward with something like that, because I feel like I've been hearing that for so long, and just the idea that it's actually starting to get moving is very just very nice to hear something else positive to happen in our city, you know.
Yeah. Are you bummed out, Patrick, that you missed the window to be able to go to a new school?
A little bit, but I mean, I'll be happy knowing that it's gonna be better for everybody else, because I feel like when we were there, we kind of just dealt with it, and it kind of was just what everybody talked about. Oh my God, the school sucks. And we kind of just adapted to that. And that's just kind of how we thought of it. But I think we didn't realize, I don't think I realized how bad it was till I graduated, if that makes sense. So I think now, like, realizing I'm getting a new school, it's like, wow, I could have gotten a new school when I was there.
Yeah. Bart, you went to Cuyahoga Falls High School, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm going to say how much you guys complain about it. I think people have been complaining about it for quite some time now.
What year did you graduate, Bart?
2002.
Okay. And did you go to Roberts or Bullock?
DeSille.
Oh, you went to DeSille. Okay. So yeah, it shows what I know.
A school that no longer exists.
So, but when you went to Cuyahoga Falls High School, Bart, there was definitely an attitude like what Patrick is describing, that the school was in bad shape and you guys were due for a new one.
Well, we definitely never said we were due for a new one, but we definitely talked about how much it had been falling apart. I believe one of my friends had always brought up the story about how her dad had proposed to her mother, and it was one of them standing on the balcony proposing to the other one down on the ground just as the balcony collapsed.
This is in the high school theater?
No, this was in at one of the main doorways. There's a balcony that goes up to, I believe it's the 500s.
I know what you're talking about. It's the doors on 4th Street.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez, I didn't even know that collapsed.
Yeah, so it's just the story, the horror stories that we would constantly see and hear about that. And it's been bad. I went to a friend's graduation a couple years ago and went to use the restrooms over by the band room. And it was like, okay, which toilet actually works?
Well,
yeah.
I know the district has been having to, you know, make do with what they have, and I think the community as a whole is excited that there's going to be a new building, even if they weren't real happy about the tax increase that they are currently having to deal with. I got my first mortgage check or mortgage bill where I could actually see the difference this month. I'm not really sure exactly what the delay was, but you know, most people who pay mortgages have an escrow account. So when they pay the bank a monthly payment, a portion of that goes toward paying their actual mortgage, and then other portions of that go to paying taxes and things. And those taxes are usually put that money is usually put into an account where it's held until those tax payments are due. Whereas if you own your house outright, you might get like a, I don't know if it's quarterly, you know, or whatever, but you would get a tax bill and not pay it every month, which makes that bill, I think, seem that much bigger whenever it comes due. So, you know, for me paying a mortgage, I saw the first major increase in my monthly bill this month, which I think accounts for the big bond issue having gone through and them collecting those extra payments now. It wasn't a huge increase on my monthly bill. We feel it a little bit, but we know where it's going, and I think we're happy that it's going to go, you know, to that project. But again, it's going to be 18 months to 2 years before we have, you know, any kind of plans that we can actually move forward on and break ground. And, you know, they're going to demolish Bullock and Newberry in order to be able to make this project happen. So we will see. But if you have a kid in elementary school right now, you know, they'll go to that school. They just will. I suppose there's a possibility a kid or older than that would go. Maybe if you're in the sixth grade, maybe, but I wouldn't bet on it. You know, the high school, having been in there several times now, I was going to say this. You guys were talking about kind of talking crap about your school while you're in it. Where I went to school in Cincinnati area, we did get a new school. Right around my senior year is when it opened. And we talked crap about that school, and it was brand new. So I don't know that your average high school student can really be, not cynical about their high school building. I guess you'd have to be one of the Noah Spinners of the world to feel that kind of pride. I don't know. What do you think, Patrick? Am I off base on that?
It's like everybody just thinks their school sucks no matter how new it is. Like just that attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd see that. But I think with ours, just the way it's been like seen as old for so long, I think kind of like the irritation they don't have a new school kind of just like when Bart was there, like people realized the problems, but it wasn't, and then it just kind of kept going and going, and then people started to realize, well, we need a new school. I remember when I was in fifth grade, I was in band. I always bring this up. I would go to band concerts there, and it was in bad shape, and I was in fifth grade, so.
Yeah.
Just good that they're able to figure something out, and instead of everybody discussing, like, yeah, I think we're going to get a new one. I think it's just nice to know for certain that they're getting somewhere, that we're at a starting point now.
Yeah, I mean, difficult though it may have been, you know, this is truly a story of the community pulling together to provide a really important resource for our kids. So,
right.
Yeah, it'll be nice in a few years when we're watching people build a school and then, eventually cutting a ribbon on that thing and watching kids go in there every day. So, good news, I think, that the project is moving forward.
Definitely.
So it was reported that the Cuyahoga Falls Fresh Farm Garden that residents may often see as they drive past the high school, speaking of the high school, there on 6th Street has been a big success in 5 seasons of operation now. This year alone, they were able to donate 2,360 pounds of fresh produce to area food banks like Good Neighbors of Cuyahoga Falls, the Akron Canton Regional Food Bank, and the Church in Silver Lake's Mobile Food Pantry. The garden was started originally as a program for general and special education students alike in the district, and a good way for them to teach math and science alongside like independence and job skills. They say usually the program is well staffed with students, but the pandemic left them a bit shorthanded, but they still produced all that produce, which included sweet potatoes, radishes, carrots, corn, kale, zucchini, and beans. And then they also tried out cantaloupe and tomatillos, which tomatillos you don't see a lot in neighborhood gardens in Cuyahoga Falls, probably. But apparently that was something that they tried out this year in the Fresh Farm Garden there by the high school. So I thought that was just a really cool article. I had no idea that they were producing that much produce. Did you guys?
No. In fact, I constantly saw it there. You know, I just assumed anything that was there had been there a while.
Right.
Not that it was constantly being planted.
Yeah, and I think the article even said that there was usually a push to plant the gardens at the appropriate time in the season by students and families, but because of the coronavirus, they didn't have as many people on hand, but there were still several families and community members who came down and helped plant it. So they had enough people to be able to plant it and move forward with it this year, which is great. I live really close to the high school, so I drive by there a lot. And I've seen them working on it. I very often see what I assume are students in there pulling weeds and harvesting produce. What a great thing that not only are they able to teach students, you know, these valuable skills that align with some of the, you know, things that they need to learn in school anyway, but then also use the literal fruits of their labor to, you know, provide food for people who need it at these food banks. And especially to be able to do that this year during a pandemic when there are even more people who are in need of those kinds of things. I just thought this was really a positive story. All right. So one more thing we wanted to do is just take a minute to discuss some of the issues that are going to appear on Cuyahoga Falls ballots this year. So by now, most people know quite a bit about the candidates who are going to appear on the ballot for mailers and online ads, etc. But voters may not be aware of the issues on the ballot. So we want to just give a quick rundown of the issues. And so one of the more kind of confusing ones, I think, is issue 13. And so the deal here is that the Charter Review Commission suggested that the charter be amended to allow the mayor to appoint an additional member to the Planning Commission, which reviews development maps and plans in order to advise City Council, rendering the City Council appointee to that commission a non-voting member. The City Council member apparently has two votes in the Planning Commission, but Charter Review thought that the City Council member should only vote on Planning Commission matters after they've gone through the Planning Commission and made their way to City Council. And so if we were to pass issue 13, that would be what would happen. Is that confusing?
Very.
Bart, is it confusing for you?
Yeah, it was. I read that a couple times and was trying to piece it together.
Yeah, so this is why I wanted to cover this one in particular. So basically, there's a city council person who sits on the Planning Commission. I'm not sure which city council person it is right now, but one member of the city council sits on the Planning Commission. And apparently, as it goes right now, when something is brought before the Planning Commission and that commission decides whether or not to approve a project, the city council person who sits on the commission gets two votes on that development or whatever it is. And so that just, according to the mayor and I guess his administration, they just didn't think that was like quite democratic enough. And that if a city council person was going to vote on something like that when it made its way to city council from the Planning Commission anyway, then why should that city council person have not one vote but two votes? And so what this will actually do is it'll give the mayor the power to appoint one more person to the Planning Commission from the community. So not a city council person or whatever. That person from the community would have a vote on Planning Commission matters, but the city council person would go from having those two votes to having no votes. And they would still sit on the commission, but they wouldn't have a vote. And then when things made it through the Planning Commission, they would then get a vote when whatever issue it was came to city council. And then issue 36. So issue 36 is a tax levy that supports the school district's operating expenses. It's a renewal of a levy that was first passed in 2014. So it doesn't increase taxes from what residents are currently paying. The district's budget has been hit hard by COVID-19. Nearly $3 million has been spent on expenses related to the pandemic, which includes $1.9 million in state funding reductions, nearly $800,000 in revenue loss due to open enrollment losses, $140,000 in safety purchases, plus thousands spent on new computer equipment for students, as well as faculty hiring for online learning support and programming expenses. So, you know, the state has cut the funding of the district by $1.9 million, and we've had all these other expenses. So this year alone, losing $5.7 million that's provided by this levy would have a pretty severe impact on the district. Not to mention the fact that there are things like owner-occupied tax credits that actually make it so that what each resident pays for this levy is a little lower net than it would be if we asked for new money. So if this issue were to not pass, the district would probably have to ask for more money in the form of another levy. And let's say they ask for the same amount of money, $5.7 million. The amount that the residents would actually pay would be more than what they pay now, because the tax credits that that are applied to the current levy are no longer available. And so since the old levy has those tax credits, if it were to be renewed, then we would continue to get those tax credits as residents, and pay a little less than what the than what it actually generates, than what the levy actually generates. So, yeah. And so if voters reject issue 36, the district would lose that $5.7 million annually. And according to Superintendent Todd Nichols, this would mean a nearly $9 million deficit for the district in the 2021 fiscal year. So, that's what's going on with issue 36. What do you guys think?
Hopeful that it passes.
Yeah, I kind of worry that it won't pass, particularly with the new, with them deciding to build the new school and, you know, finally going into plans about it. I worry that they'll look at it and say, we've already given you money, you know, that you don't need to, even if it is just a renewal. I know they say, we've given you enough money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some sense from the community, I've seen this around, that you know, that the money that was given to the district to build the new buildings would be money that they could use to offset the expenses that losing this levy would, you know, would produce in terms of a deficit. But that's actually not true, because the money that was passed for the purposes of building new buildings is required by law to be spent in the way that it was, you know, that it was meant to be spent, so that they can't do that. I've also heard people in the community express frustration with the current way that school's being, you know, administered because of the pandemic. And there's some sense that people might retaliate for their frustrations with the education that their students are getting right now because of the pandemic by not passing the levy. But again, it actually will increase taxes if they're to ask for new money if this one doesn't pass. It's just, you know, it's just, it would be bad news for the district financially for sure. So I agree with Patrick. I would definitely like to see it pass. And I know that there's a strong group of supporters in the community who are working hard to make sure that voters are well informed and will hopefully therefore decide to pass it. So that is issue 36. We also have issue 45. Issue 45 is a renewal of the levy that supports the Cuyahoga Falls Library. This one's pretty simple. If you want the library to be able to continue offering its many materials and services, you have to vote for issue 45. If you don't, then you vote no. But this one seems very uncontroversial to me. Patrick, maybe you can tell me what you think. It just seems like everybody likes the library for a different reason, whether you're getting a movie, taking your kids there to play, grabbing an audiobook, going online and getting a book for your Kindle or whatever it is. And so I just don't see a good reason to, you know, take that funding away from the library. What do you think, Patrick?
I feel like that'd be kind of like a, well, obviously we're going to like keep that running. I feel like that'd be like a unanimous, like everybody would agree with that. Like it's a library. I don't know what, I can't think of any reason people would be like, no, we can't provide stuff at the library. We don't, like, I don't know what reason we would have to not have more resources for the library, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you were like a staunch libertarian or something, you might think that, you know, your tax dollars shouldn't be spent for, you know, the public good or whatever, which is a simplification, I suppose, of libertarianism. But that would be the only reason I would think that people would not support it. I think people who are in a tight financial situation would want to renew this levy to make sure that the library has the resources it needs to continue operating. And I think we're going to see historic turnout in this year's election in spite of the pandemic because of it, you know, being a presidential election. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was over, if it was overwhelmingly, you know, supported. But we'll see. And that's, you know, that's what issue 45 is. So you like the library, vote in favor of 45. And so the last one is issue 47. This one's another renewal levy. And in this case, it supports the Akron Zoo. It does so by generating money to help maintain the park. And it'll also allow the zoo to continue expanding educational services and facilities that are offered by the zoo. Hey, Bart, when was the last time you went to the zoo?
It's actually been a while because I wanted to go when they had the free entry for Cuyahoga Falls, but I was worried that too many people would be there. And with COVID, yeah, it was worrisome.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah, long time for me too, and especially with COVID, I haven't, nobody's reached out to go to the zoo, because my aunt and I used to go every once in a while, but nope. It's been a few years at least, actually, I think, since I've been there.
Yeah, so, you know, being the one on the call with little kids, I can say that I've been to some zoos pretty recently, but my sister-in-law routinely will buy us passes to a zoo or something like that, if we want it. And for a couple years in a row when my kids were pretty little, we went to the Akron Zoo. So we had passes 2 years in a row. And then I think the next year was, my kid's birthday is in January, so she would do it for their birthday. So that next year, she asked if we wanted a zoo pass, and I said, well, let's do Cleveland instead of Akron, because we haven't spent much time at the Cleveland Zoo. And she said, okay. And then we waited to activate the membership until the summer, until the first time we went, which I think was in maybe May or June. And so we activated our membership, and we went quite a bit that year. And we generally would go even in the wintertime. But since it was Cleveland, we didn't do that quite as much. And then in March when the pandemic hit, you know, we weren't going to go to the zoo at all. When it finally did reopen, you have to reserve a spot to be able to go so that they stagger, you know, when people enter and stuff. And then they extended our membership maybe even through October, but we still haven't been. Most recently, we went to the Columbus Zoo, and I had never actually been there. And when you buy a zoo pass through Cleveland or Akron or Cincinnati or wherever, you very often get reciprocation. So you can go to other zoos for a reduced price or for free if you have a pass to a different zoo. But they ended that during the pandemic, too, to cut down on the number of people who were coming in. So we ended up having to pay to go into the Columbus Zoo, which the Columbus Zoo is amazing. I mean, you know, we pet stingrays, you know, with our fingers, and we got up close and personal with a lot of different animals. It's a very, very nice zoo. But it feels a bit more like an amusement park because it's so large, and they actually do have some rides, like more than just, you know, the merry-go-round like they have at Akron and Cleveland. So I have been to several zoos lately, and I fully intended already for next year to get a pass for Akron, because Akron actually has two amazing new exhibits coming up. I think it's Wild Asia, and it might be Wild Africa or like the Savannah or something like that. I'm not sure. But, you know, those two new exhibits, I think, are going to be slated to open next year. Plus, with any luck, the Blue Lobster will be on display for everybody to see finally. So, you know, I got to get to the Akron Zoo, and, you know, Claudia, the Blue Lobster from Cuyahoga Falls, well, you know, by way of the Atlantic Ocean, I assume, she needs that money, you know, so that she can have a nice tank and be acclimated and salinated appropriately. Right. So you got to support the zoo, and that's issue 45. Oh, sorry. Nope. That's issue 47. Issue 45 is the library. So, anyway, we hope that, this little rundown of the issues on your ballot are helpful. If we missed one and you want us to talk about it on here, send us an email, falsefreepress@gmail.com, and we will fit it in. The last thing we want to do is just remind our listeners of some more important information regarding voting in this year's elections. Absentee ballots were supposed to start mailing out last Tuesday to those who requested them, but there was a machine malfunction at the printer that is contracted to print the ballots, which caused a 1 week delay. So ballots should actually be mailing now. And I actually got mine this morning. Today's the 13th. So that means they must have not been as behind as they thought they were. Basically, the printer had to process triple the usual number of absentee ballots. Big surprise in a pandemic. But that's the cause for the delay. One of their machines apparently just couldn't handle the demand. So if you requested an absentee ballot, you should be getting it any time now. I requested mine quite a while ago, so I was probably in one of the first batches of ballots that went out. But are you guys voting absentee?
I requested an absentee ballot, but I think instead of mailing it out, I'm going to, fill it out, get it all, enveloped up, and then I'm going to deliver it to the some county board of elections.
Yeah, I think they have a Dropbox out there where you can do that. So,
but that way I don't have to worry about the mail.
Yeah, yeah. All the talk about the lack of faith in the absentee balloting system this year was not exactly put to rest by the printer printing the ballots being delayed by a week, and it was, of course, would happen in Summit County too, so Patrick, what's your plan?
We're gonna vote on election day in person.
Okay, so you're actually gonna go walk inside and vote the old-fashioned way.
Yep.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a particular fear of doing that. I had actually volunteered to be a poll worker, but I thought I needed to get mine in early so I wouldn't have to vote on the day. When I showed up to the poll worker training, there was an announcement that they needed 1,800 poll workers to operate an election in Summit County, and they had over 4,500 people who had signed up to be poll workers. So, call me crazy, but I don't think I'm going to get the call to work the polls this year if they already had that many the day I was training. So, anyway, I did get my ballot in the mail, and I'm going to mail it back and, check on it to see if they received it after the fact. So
that's a good sign, though, if that many people want to help at the ballot. That means there's that many dedicated people out there who want to make sure the system works.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's a very good sign for the election and for democracy, frankly, So just remember that absentee voting by mail can take place through November 2nd, but so can early in-person voting at the county polling place next to the Board of Elections on Grant Street in Akron. So you can vote right now. I mean, I don't know if they're open at 6:30, which is the time when we're recording this, but you can go into the polling place down by the Board of Elections. You're not going to be able to miss it because there's going to be signs everywhere for candidates and people passing out sample ballots. And there have been heavy lines down there. People really, really adamant to get their vote. In fact, I think I saw an article in the paper about a guy who was having medical problems while waiting in line to vote and refused to be taken away by an ambulance. This was in Summit County. And so they brought him inside to help him vote. And then while he was inside, he ended up having some more trouble, and they actually had to cart him out and into an ambulance, and he didn't get a chance to vote, unfortunately. So, that's just how serious people are taking this election.
Definitely.
But like you say, that's a good sign, I think. So, if you do plan to vote absentee, October 31st is the deadline to request your ballot, and November 2nd is the deadline to postmark your absentee ballot. Of course, there's been tons of requests, so highly recommendable that you get your ballot as soon as possible, get it filled out, and either drop it off at the polling place down there on Grand Street in Akron, or mail it in as soon as you can, or go down in person and vote early. There have been long waits for that, but you know, it's a option that is available to you. And then, of course, November 3rd is Election Day. The polls are open from 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Your absentee ballot has to be received at the Summit County Board of Elections by 7:30 p.m. if you vote that way. And again, you can hand deliver your absentee ballot if you want to. Guys, voting is so important. We really can't stress enough how important it is for you to get out there and make your voice heard by voting. So please make sure that you do that, and make a plan. And if you have any questions, I know we would be more than happy to answer them. If you want to email us at fallsfreepress@gmail.com, but even better, go to the Summit County Board of Elections website, call the Summit County Board of Elections, you know, do whatever you have to do to get the information you need, make a plan, and get out there and vote.
Absolutely. Get out and vote.
Yeah.
And you can't complain if you don't vote.
That's right.
Yeah. I think I once knew somebody who had a bumper sticker on their car that said, "Didn't vote, not complaining," which, you know, it's not a cool bumper sticker, man. You're not cool for that bumper sticker. You're lame.
Right, yeah.
But still, if you don't go out there and vote and voice your opinion and try to make a change, then you can't complain about how things are or are not changing.
Right.
Because obviously you didn't care enough to put anything into action.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely true. And there, you know, there's tons of signs all over town now. Everybody knows there's an election coming up. Everybody knows, you know, what's at stake. It's all so important. So, you know, I know I have been more involved than I've ever been in the past, in helping make sure that the candidates I support have the support they need. Because I just think this election is so important, but, you know, I just think that's what we have to do anymore. There's no sitting on the sidelines. So whether you share, you know, on social media your perspectives about whatever your favorite candidates are, or send $5, $20, $100 to your favorite candidate to help them win, or, you know, send out text messages, or, you know, participate in volunteer projects like lit dropping and stuff like that. You know, getting involved is great. And we definitely support that. But at the very least, got to get out there and vote. So do it. All right, Bart, it's time for your favorite part of the podcast.
So I've got a couple things in the art departments this week. Bart's art department, we can call it that.
I just like the art department, though, I have to say. It sounds like, you know, like a you know, the wing of a prestigious university or something.
Yes. So a couple different things happened this week. If you're walking down Front Street, you'll notice that there are new planters set up along, going all the way down Front Street. Different, I believe it was about six different ones. Seven, oh, nine. I apologize. There are nine new planters, fully decorated, each one with a different design by a local artist. And we should be having an article about this soon.
That's so awesome. I saw the pictures of them, like, you know, putting the, whatever it is, the vinyl that they use to put the images on the planters. I think on the Downtown Cuyahoga Falls Partnership's Instagram page. They look so cool, man.
Oh, they do. And that's what I was kind of wondering, how how these were made.
I think it's like the same way they used to do car wraps, you know, or like
that's what I figured,
or like window tinting or whatever. Yeah.
But these are super awesome. The different brand new different designs on each one. And I said there's nine. So we've got art from Abigail Sipper. I'm just going to butcher all these names now, and people can complain later.
Hey, man, any press is good press.
So you've got art from Abigail Sipper, Mia Greenwood, Jennifer Sheriff, Bryce Lowry, Kimmy Henderson, Chris Camarato, and Dara Harper.
Yeah, so it's cool to have local artists on planters. That's a cool thing for downtown. Just more and more character down there, man.
Absolutely. And staying downtown, a temporary art exhibit is going to be going up at the High Bridge Glens Park. It's called We the People, and it's a series of portraits featuring community members from all over the world who are now living in Northeast Ohio.
That's super cool.
And I'm looking at the photos. I mean, these are pretty big photos. Yeah, it said the public exhibit is 25 panels that are 84 by 60 inches.
Wow.
So yeah, about 8 feet tall. And then finally, as I mentioned last week, the Public Arts Board has been officially created and the appointees were approved by City Council. Their first official meeting is scheduled for November. And the board will have staggered terms, and since it's new, it says both newspaper reported both Molly Hartong and C. Arthur Croyle will serve only 2-year terms, while the other three members will serve 5-year terms. And then they just discussed last night the city council appointee to the board, and we should have that information soon.
Awesome. So I wonder if, I mean, the public art board's not quite finished. They haven't had their first meeting. They're still waiting on that last member or two. They've already done some public art projects, like the planters. So, you know.
Oh, and some of these projects, I imagine, had been in the works for a while.
Yeah. So last chance to paint offensive murals downtown. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. No, it's great. It's great for the city to have art and to be, you know, participating in the arts. And we've spoken to Matt Weiss of Collide Cuyahoga Falls, which I know is also involved in that art project at High Bridge Glens that you were just talking about with the giant pictures, in addition to being involved with the public arts master plan. And his counterpart in Collide Cuyahoga Falls is Molly Hartong. So she's, you know, very well qualified to be on that board, as is Bart's dad, Tom, who's a really impressive artist in his own right, making really cool. I want to say that he's like a welding artist, man. He just does everything. Would mixed media be the wrong way to describe what your dad does?
3D art.
3D art. So just anything that he can kind of, because he messes around with all kind of, he tinkers, but he tinkers things into art. Instead of tinkering them into, I don't know. I mean, I guess some of his art is functional, though, right? He makes, like, light-up signs and stuff.
Yeah, well, and he, between the art and the things that he has repaired and refurbished. So, yeah, it's definitely, yeah, he is one of the reasons that he was appointed was because of his art and because he is a three-dimensional artist.
Yeah, and you can check out Tom's stuff at Cosmic Works on Facebook. It's WERKS, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can check out Tom's stuff.
And I know he's on both Facebook and Instagram.
Oh yeah, he is on Instagram because I've seen some of his stuff. He's a pretty impressive picker. He'll go around and find all kinds of stuff. And I know, like, he just recently put a picture up where he had found a complete component system that was like vintage stereo equipment that he found over the course of several years, all matching pieces of it, and was pretty proud of that. So yeah, you can check out Tom's stuff on Cosmic Works. Well, that's awesome. Any other art news?
I don't have any other art news at the moment, but I'm sure to have some real soon.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Fallscast. Again, we want to thank our listeners for joining us. And as always, if you have an idea for someone you think we should interview, drop us a line at falsefreepress@gmail.com. And remember that we are always in the market for article submissions too, which you can also send to falsefreepress@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out falsefreepress.com, where we have the new article about the State House candidate, Bob Young, and his suspicious fires. So check that out. We will say goodbye for now, and we hope you will join us next week. And don't forget to hang around after this discussion to hear our interview with Community Development Director Diana Colavecchio. And don't forget to get your plan together to make your voice heard and vote. But now we have to say goodbye. So goodbye.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you guys next week. Thanks, guys. Okay, we're back on the Fallscast, and we are really happy to be able to welcome the Cuyahoga Falls Community Development Director, Diana Colavecchio. Diana, thank you so much for joining us.
You are quite welcome. I'm thrilled to be a part of this. You are doing exactly what our city needs to have happen by getting the word out from the people who live here about all the excitement that's surrounding our city, because we are experiencing a renaissance, and we see it, and we know that people are paying attention, but it's nice to know that you here also get it and are doing what you can do to promote our city on every platform available. So this is fantastic.
It is our pleasure. We are just people who care so much about this community, but I think that's one of the things that really sets this community apart, is that the people who live here do care about their community. This is not an insular community. This is a community of people who talk to each other and, you know, talk about the store that's going to open downtown and, you know, why the fire truck was going down the road at 2 a.m. and whatever. So I think that's a good thing. Even if it's a headache from time to time, you know. So you are a person whose name has been well known in this community for quite some time. And so in addition to talking to you about the position you currently hold, I was hoping we could just get a little bit of your story, because it is such an interesting story. I wanted to ask, I guess, to start, are you like a born and raised Cuyahoga Falls person, or did you come here at a young age, or?
I am not. The mayor is. And that's why you see all the enthusiasm that comes from him. I am born and bred in Akron, Ohio, on North Hill, when North Hill was Little Italy. I was born into that community, and my parents had six kids, and we all went to Akron Public Schools. So I graduated from North High School in 1978, and I'm proud to say that I still have connections with some of my best friends that I graduated with. In fact, we still get together for lunch on a fairly regular basis. It's been kind of interesting to follow all of our careers. I went to law school. One of my good friends went to medical school. One is a CPA. And then one of them is the clerk of counsel, who had gone off to court reporting school and worked for one of our local domestic judges. So there's one of the things we talk about is how now that each of us are approaching retirement at some juncture here, is going back to North High School and talking to the students there and getting them involved and getting them to listen into how they can project their careers out there, because we are all examples of a high quality public school education that just didn't happen. I mean, there was a lot of mentors along the way, a lot of promotion along the way, and our careers all took individual paths that landed us where we are at now. So very proud of my background there from Akron. But I landed here in 91. Bought a house on High Street, a little two-bedroom bungalow, got married, had a child, and then we built our home in the Dales. So I live over here and have since 1996, and I absolutely love living here. Of course, I get to travel quite a bit, and I have in my lifetime, and every time I go away, I feel like I need to go back home in about 4 days. I get anxious to be home. And I have never found a place that I thought I would rather live than in Cuyahoga Falls. I think we are the best and the mayor says this all the time, we are a big, small city, and it's true. For a town of 50,000, it's just amazing the level of services that we provide and the amenities that we have here. So very pleased to be a part of this community.
Yeah, it feels like everybody knows each other, but, you know, you can walk downtown and get an artisan cup of coffee and, you know, just really take advantage of a bustling downtown that really has come alive in the time since you've been community development director and since the mayor has been in office. So we're real proud of that downtown. And a bunch of us here with the Falls Free Press and the Falls Cast live very close to downtown too. So we're down there quite a bit. So maybe we could talk a little bit about your career before this point, because I know you were for a time a practicing attorney, but you eventually made your way to city council. You were the council president. I think there was an at-large seat maybe in there at one point, and you were the clerk of courts. So can you talk to us about kind of maybe give us that narrative?
Well, after I got out of high school, I went to Akron University, and I worked my way through. I was a legal secretary by day for two pioneering female lawyers. They both graduated from Akron's law school together. And this is, we're talking like 1977. There were not job opportunities for female lawyers. So they conjoined forces and started their own law firm. But again, they were brand new. They had no real revenue stream. They were just kicking off. Kind of the interesting thing here is my best friend from high school, who's Dana.
Dana Capriola, the clerk of council?
Yes, right. We were best friends from high school, and we both took the technical track, not the college prep track. We were in the secretarial science program. So when this is kind of how ironic life is. So there was a job opening at the Akron Bar Association, and our teacher sent both of us to interview, and Dana got the job. And the guy that interviewed her, his name was Jim, he picked her over me, but we were best friends, and we were like, okay, that is what it is. Well, it wasn't 2 weeks into that job that one of the women that started this law firm came into the Bar Association. Her name was Kay Belfance, and she was looking for a part-time secretary. So Dana told me about that, and then I got that job. So it all worked out very well. I was working for this law firm of these two women, and she was working at the Akron Bar Association downtown, and all was great. My two women that I worked for went on to become, like I said, really well-known attorneys in the area. Catherine Belfance became a bankruptcy trustee, had her own practice. She's now affiliated with a large law firm in downtown. Her daughter, Eve Belfance, is the law director for Akron. And the other lawyer was Judith Nicely, who later became one of the domestic relations court judges. Totally revamped how we do domestic law in Summit County, put in a whole infrastructure for family court services and counseling and educating parents on how to be better parents when they're going through a divorce. And then they added other lawyers to the firm. They added Jane Bond. Jane Bond became a Summit County General Division judge in our county, and she married Jim Wagner, and he was the only male in our firm. But we had, that firm grew, and as it grew, I was working during the day as their secretary and going to school at night. And it took 7.5 years to get my degree. Like you, I'm an English major. And it was kind of crazy, but I always thought I've always got to take at least one class every semester. I was so afraid that if I didn't, that I might drop out.
The best lawyers are English majors, by the way. Just
yeah, I know. Well, you say that, but in my law school class, we had a variety of backgrounds. People did well, even coming from other backgrounds. But at any rate, Kay, she was my boss, my mentor, and she's the one who convinced me that once I had my English degree, that I should go to law school. And so with her mentorship, I did. And that's when I kind of made the switch. So after a total of 10.5 years of education, I got my law degree. And I went to work for her for a short while. And then I worked for the UAW Legal Services Plan, which was a paid-for benefit for the auto workers exclusively. So we did only personal legal services for the auto workers that worked at Chrysler, in Twinsburg, and at the Ford Walton Hills plant. And back then, that was, you know, early 80s, there were about 4,800 auto workers at Ford and about another 2,600 at Chrysler. And today, as you know, those are gone. Those jobs are completely gone. The Chrysler building's been long since torn down and rebuilt. And it's kind of sad to see that. But that's what I did for 12 years. And I learned how to do mostly bankruptcy and probate and estate planning, wills, trusts, personal services kinds of law. And I was a member of the union. We had the only attorneys union in the country. There were about 37 offices for the UAW in the country. And I got involved in the union. I think I was the secretary one year, maybe even the treasurer. But as that auto industry started to become more automated and robots started doing more of the jobs, we saw that industry start to really ratchet down. And just at the time, my child was going into second grade. I really wanted to make the switch from working full-time to part-time. And that put me in danger's way because I no longer had union protection at that point. And when the industry started to dive, I was laid off. So that's when I opened my doors and I had a business, my own law practice, a solo practice on Graham Road, right across from Krieger's store. And I was there for about 4 years. And then I moved down Graham Road and had a law condo, also still on Graham Road. But to assist in keeping that business alive and jumpstarting that business, I was approached and asked to run for city council, and I did. And I was successful when I ran for my ward seat back in 2005.
That was Ward 5?
It was Ward 5, yes. So it was kind of cool. I had my lived in Ward 5, and my business was in Ward 5. And that worked very well. And I was on city council through 2013. In January of 2013, I was asked to succeed Lisa Zeno Carano as the clerk of courts for the Stowe Municipal Court, and I did. But in that appointment, I had to also agree to run for that seat in 2013. So I did, and I lost that race. So we actually, that was a sad day for me. There were 22 employees there I felt responsible for. One of the downsides of being in politics is, yes, you have wins and you like to celebrate them, but the lows are pretty low. And that was tough. It was really a tough time for me. But I rebounded, and 2 years later, I ran again in 15, and I succeeded. So I became the clerk of courts in 2016, and I stayed in that position until our mayor invited me to come here and join his team in February of 2019. So I've been the development director here now for about a year and a half. So that variety of background, having a legal background and a business owner background and being on council and being involved in a union and understanding the rights of collective bargaining and being laid off, that personal experience of being laid off, personal experience of building a home and being a resident here, all have helped me and helped shape the decisions that I bring to this job as community development director. So I'm very, you know, as hard as some of those experiences were, I have to say that they also were instrumental in what I think about now when I think about the decisions we make. So I can't say that I'm glad those bad things happened, but I certainly say that they were relevant, very, very relevant in my life.
Cool. Yeah, it really is an impressive story. I mean, I think, you know, more people need to hear it, so hopefully we can get it out there for you. I was going to ask, because you were on council starting in 2005, you know, there was a Republican mayor in the city for, I think, 20 some years, and he would have been in office when you joined council. Obviously, politics right now are a lot more contentious maybe than they used to be, although I'm sure there are peaks and valleys at any time in history, particularly at the local level. But did you find it difficult? I mean, you were council president at one time, so there must have been a Democratic majority on council at some point during his tenure. But did you find it difficult to work with an administration that was not only of a different party, but also particularly entrenched from having been in office for so long?
Sure. Well, when I won my seat in 05, when I took office in 06, we flipped the majority to Democratic majority. So prior to that, it had been a Republican majority on council, and then you had a Republican mayor. So I can't speak to how everyone felt about that because I wasn't a part of that. But once we flipped it to a Democratic majority, we obviously at that time felt like we had some instant success. How much success, though, is, I think, you know, kind of, it's a misnomer, let me just say that, to think that you can control the administration from a city council seat in Cuyahoga Falls. You cannot. And the reason for that is our charter creates a very strong mayoral form of government here. So our mayor has the right to do certain things without city council approval. For example, he can spend up to $50,000 on any one project without bringing legislation to city council for approval. And there are other examples of that. But he, at the time I took office, and we did have a president, and I had a mentor, Kathy Hummel, showed me the ropes. She had been on council for a long time, and I think at the end of her career, she had spent some 18 years on council. She was very instrumental in showing me how things should happen. And she was the one who said, hey, you know, you can run this seat any way you want. You can sit back and just sort of take a reactive view of the world and just let things happen, or you could be proactive and you can go out there and try to make things happen in your ward, or just, you know, try to be proactive citywide. So I took that to heart. I think she gave good advice, and I chose to be proactive. So I went out, and the first thing I did was start having quarterly ward meetings with the residents. And that was interesting because they all obviously knew way more than I did about what was going on. They had been tuned into what was going on with council longer than I had. So they had great stories for me. They had a whole list of things that I should be working on and finding answers to. And I did then go and meet with every single administrative official. Now, there's no question that when you're in the minority party and the opposite party has the reins, they are doing those jobs 40 hours a week. So the finance director of our city looks at the budget 40 hours a week. They know in and out exactly what's happening with finances. So when you're just doing the job on a part-time basis as a council person, you don't have that access and you don't have that knowledge or know-how. So you do oftentimes feel like you're working in the dark. The fact that you make any significant changes under those circumstances is probably a testament to just your ability to navigate through all of that. I had a very good working relationship with that administration, despite our political differences. They asked me then to serve on their committee when it was time to deal with the then dilapidated, blighted State Road Shopping Center. And they put me on that committee to gauge the wherewithal and financial viability of any future development at that site and interview prospective contractors and developers who would develop that site. So I think they appreciated that I had a legal background, but you can never be entirely invited into the fold when you're of the opposite party. But I tried to use those experiences to learn what I could, and all of that was helpful then when I was president. And I like to think that I was good at bringing people together, getting a consensus, explaining what direction would be the best direction under the circumstances when you're not getting your way all the time. And I did that for a couple of years and I enjoyed it. But there's no question that sometimes being on council is a two-edged sword because you want to do good. I think the people who run for council want to be are there for all the right reasons, and they have intentions to make sure that the things in their ward that need fixed are fixed. But the double-edged sword is there are oftentimes things that cannot be fixed, and it's hard to communicate that back to the people who are putting the pressure on you to do it. Sometimes they can't be fixed because you can't convince the people in authority to make that decision, or you can't convince them to allocate those monies or to put that in the capital plan for the next 5 years, because they have their own designs on what direction they want to go. And when you're not in the controlling seat for those things, it can be frustrating. So yes, over time it was frustrating. When I was offered this position to go off and be the clerk of courts, I thought that that would be a good avenue for me to go. I was tiring of practicing law. It's hard to do that. It's hard to do that on your own. And so it just made sense to kind of, all those things were kind of coming together, and it made sense to go off and be the clerk of courts. And I liked being the clerk of courts. It had its own other sets of political pressure. I was in a building that I was of one party, and the two judges in that building were of a different party, and they did not get along. So it made life kind of very difficult, and there was a lot of pressure to perform, because there was always this underlying sense that municipal courts should be paying through their own fees and costs, should be paying for their employee wages and their payroll and operating expenses, and instead of asking the host community to subsidize those expenses. So I inherited a situation where I walked into brand new software that had gone live already but wasn't working so well, and a collection system that was faltering, and had to kind of hit the ground running and make a lot of changes quickly. And I felt good about the changes that we made. I mean, when I arrived, the collections that we were getting in from our third-party collection agency were only averaging about $4,000 a month. And we had gone to work to try to work with the Attorney General's office out of Columbus to do our collections. And when I left, we were averaging about $40,000 a month by working with the Attorney General's office. So,
wow.
I guess what I try to do when I look at situations is I try to realize that I alone don't have the answers, try to be resourceful, figure out who does, and supplement where we can get help. And I saw the Attorney General's office as a way of helping us, because I couldn't hire more people. That would throw my budget out of whack. I could only have one person in my office who was staffed to do collections. But the Attorney General's office has a whole room full of people who will do your collections for you. And they only charge 10% instead of the usual 33 1/3 that most collection agencies and collection attorneys charge. So I saw that as a way to kind of bridge the gaps that we had. And it worked. It worked very well. But given that our mayor and I were friends from serving on council together before, given that I knew he had really good ideas for our city, and we ran together when we ran in 2013, I was just thrilled that he called and offered me this position, and there was no way I was going to turn it down. I saw this as the next natural step in my career, and I will retire from the city of Cuyahoga Falls, barring some unforeseen circumstances, because I really do love the work that we do.
Yeah, I want to get to that. You talked about the State Road Shopping Center. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that that's what became Portage Crossing.
That's right.
Which is one of the biggest shopping developments that we had in the city prior to Front Street. I mean, in the time I had lived here, and probably in the time a lot of people had lived here, that is a really amazing little development up there. And I mean, it's still growing. I mean, the cake building's gone, and we've got a car wash up there, and even the little shopping center right out in front of Market District now is starting to get some of the overflow from the foot traffic that's there. Smoothie King and Wingstop, chain type stores are going in there because they see the potential. So that's a great development. Let's talk then about community development. As you mentioned, this is the position you came to sort of at the request of the mayor while you were serving as clerk of courts at Stowe Municipal Court. Talk to us about what a community development director does.
Well, that the answer to that, Alex, is still unfolding. I find my role changes, and that's a good thing, because the more I'm here and the more I relate to my employees in my and my staff in my department and throughout the city, I see the need for me to do things in a different way sometimes, or do more things. So what I inherited as the director was a staff of 8 full-time people who make that department run. They didn't need me to tell them how to do their jobs. They all do their jobs and they do them perfectly. Beginning with the administrative staff, there's a full-time person who handles most of our administrative functions, and then a part-time who assists with those functions. There are 2 housing directors that handle all of the citywide complaints that people make, whether it's, hey, my neighbor's tree is falling onto my yard, or hey, my neighbor's siding is falling off of their house, or I think my neighbor's grass is too high. I mean, I have 2 inspectors that handle those kinds of complaints citywide. They've had their hands full this year because when COVID hit and people were stuck at home, guess what they decided to do? They decided to fix up their homes. I'll talk about that in a minute. But they also realized what their neighbors were doing. They were home more often. So they were looking outside and wondering what their neighbors were doing. We had record numbers of housing complaints this year, off the charts.
Wow.
I also said they were looking at around at their own homes, trying to think of what, you know, suddenly they thought, my house needs power washed. I could use a fence, maybe a deck. Hey, let's put in a pool because we can't go anywhere. We did record numbers of permitting for fences, decks, and pools this year. We have 2 planners. One is a senior planner who handles a lot of the permitting that goes on in our office. And then we have our planning director who's famous, definitely in Ohio, and that's Fred Guerra. Fred has become a go-to person for many people throughout the state. He's heavily involved in the Ohio chapter of the American Planners Association. And before I go one step further, everyone should know that he is the one that applied for us to get that recent award, very prestigious award from the American Planners Association for the 2020 Great Places for our downtown. And he didn't tell anybody he was applying our city for that award, but he did, and we won out of 20 some other applications. And we think that's going to put us in the hopper for a national award as well. I don't know for sure yet, but that kind of recognition puts our city on the map even further. And we are already on the map quite a bit. I mean, I travel outside of Summit County and people have heard of our city and our downtown area. So we've got the 2 planners who do one does mostly the nuts and bolts permitting, and then there's Fred who does handle all of our development. So anytime somebody wants to put in a housing development or wants to build some industrial building or expand their industrial complex, Fred is the go-to person. He was very instrumental in handling the relationships with our marketing analysis consultant for reopening Front Street, and then dealing with various developers on Front Street. He assisted in getting the historic district created. He hired a consultant to do that and oversaw that process. And then he handles all of our boards and commissions. So he's there every Tuesday night when there's a planning commission meeting. Fred is there, or if he can't be, Adam is there. And they make sure that the city grows. That's their job. Make this sure the city grows. Either help businesses come here or help businesses that are here expand and grow our population. You know, we've seen a boon in population. We have built 460 some odd homes just since 2016, and we're still building homes. And we just approved another development off of State Road north of Tampson. It's called Tampson Villas, but it's north of Hidden Lakes, for another 49 owner-occupied condominiums. And we know that there's going to be other development related to housing as we go forward. We have been promoting housing because we want to keep our population numbers above 50,000. That is important. So people understand, we get HUD money that we can use for projects that are important to us, like rehabilitating some of our older neighborhoods, helping folks in the low-mod income districts rehabilitate their homes, or to assist with a roof or a porch or air conditioning, windows, if they are an individual who lives in a low-mod district or are of a low-mod income. That HUD dollars are very instrumental in helping those folks. And we use those monies also to do the senior snowplow program. That's also very big and important to our seniors. And we also used those monies because of COVID. We got extra money this year. We used that money to give to our small businesses who were suddenly overnight, you know, couldn't open their doors. So we gave out $5,000 non-matching grants to our small businesses. And to date, we've given out 63 of those. So that's 63 jobs we like to think we've saved by using HUD money. So we don't get that HUD money unless we have a population of 50,000 of residents or over. So we're always trying to balance how much residential housing do you build? How many people do you want living in your city? And we've grown that number. We'll know what the census number looks like in March. We're pretty sure we're still over 50. We were teetering on 50 before the census. But you have to balance that against, are you developing too much? So, you know, we've had an outcry lately that we are, especially in Ward 8, the Northampton section of our city. And to answer that call, what I have done is the developer is to assemble a group of residents who are motivated, highly involved in environmental efforts, not just locally, but with respect to the Conservancy and the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And we brought in the superintendent of the Cuyahoga Valley National Park to meet with him and the executive director of Summit Metro Parks. And we had many meetings with this group of residents and those two other principals. And out of that conversation grew the idea of doing a master plan for the Merriman Valley area. And just a couple weeks ago, we put out the RFQs for that master plan. So those folks will now be able to participate in very public meetings to get their ideas going forward on how we can still grow, still develop, still build new homes, but do it smart. In a smart way that's also and taking into account the fact that these developed areas are so close to the Cuyahoga Valley National Park and to the river. So as my, again, that's one example of how my role changes because that not necessarily wasn't my job when I arrived is to do something like that, but I saw that need that we needed to do something and to mobilize those folks who had a lot of good information I didn't have. I don't know all of the everything that there is to know about environmental protection and wetlands and whatnot. So they were very helpful to me to do that. So we put that together and we're off and running. And then I've got other staff in the office too. My CDBG entitlement and administrator oversees all of that funding we get from HUD. And on average, we get about $645,000 a year from HUD. So, you know, it's a lot of money, and we want to make sure that we're doing our rehab and renovations perfectly. If we mess up, we have to give the money back. No one wants to ever do that. And then with the COVID, the extra COVID money we got, we had all that extra work on our entitlement administrator this year. So I pulled up a chair and helped with that, assisted with that. My deputy development director, Mary Spoggy, also, the three of us have been meeting once a week to figure out how we're going to manage and oversee these new COVID monies and still do the job that department has to do, which is akin to running a small business. So there's a lot that's been going on in my department. I have tried to be the communicator, the liaison, the person who has resources when we don't know answers, goes and gets them. And tries to keep that department running as the best that it can, being the fact that it's somewhat understaffed. So I am a working community development director in every sense of the word. I was a working clerk when I was the clerk of courts. So I would file files away myself, make collection calls myself. I'm just kind of used to doing things that way. I get pulled aside often enough to be in meetings with cabinet and the mayor and developers. It's just an exciting time. So I don't even think of it as work. We tell each other in cabinet, this isn't a job, it's a way of life. And we are on call 24/7 and it has to be that way. And we don't even think anything of it. It's just the way that it is until we decide that it's not going to be, but it is that way. And there's so much going on here and it's such an exciting time to be a part of that we all thoroughly really enjoy what we do. So that's kind of a nutshell what we do, and it's still evolving. I mean, I never know when the law might change or an ordinance might hit or something else happens, and we've got to roll with it. Just go off in a different direction, make things happen.
Now, there's a lot of sense that a community development director is the person who's trying to get businesses to come to the city, and I know that's part of it. I mean, it sounds like there's a whole lot more to it than that, and things that I hadn't even realized that your office handles, although it makes sense. You know, we saw the Works come to town. We saw Ohio Brewing come to town. Where the Farmers Rail is going to be coming to town, you know, other businesses like that. To what extent is your office involved in, I mean, maybe it's a redundant question, but to what extent is your office involved in getting those businesses to come to the city?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do a number of things. The first thing is we are open for business, and we communicate that message in every way we can. I don't work in a vacuum. I say this all the time to people. I have to have connectors. I have to have network. I have to be out there talking to people who are interested in coming here. And I don't just do that myself. And I don't just do it within the confines of my department. So I have very good working relationships with other people, with the county, for example. They're a huge resource. Oftentimes the county will connect with us and say, hey, there's a business in Hudson. They want to come to your city. Give this person a call, see if you can help them out. Because the county just wants jobs in the county. They don't care where they're at necessarily in the county. They just want to keep them in the county. And then I have a very good working relationship with the president. The executive director of the downtown partnership, our new one, Kaylee Piper, who's fantastic, and of the chamber, Laura Petrella, you know, and Laura's reach goes further. She's overseeing businesses across the city. The three of us oftentimes will go and meet with a business together, and we will talk about our city and the resources here and the amenities here together, so that the business or a prospective business can see that there's much to offer here, and they're not just hearing it from me, but they're hearing it from three different sources, so that message it seems to be even more resounding to them, and it works well. And we love bouncing ideas off of each other, and although COVID hit, I mean, we had an idea to do some things together that kind of got waylaid. Hopefully we'll get to do those next year. But one clear example of how this also works is it was Abby Paisky, the former executive director of the partnership, who just happened to be going to Bath and stopped into the Farmers Rail Market out there and was talking to them and telling them how wonderful it would be to have a Farmers Rail in downtown Cuyahoga Falls. They hadn't thought of that before. And when she got back, she gave me their contact information. We shared contact information, and I reached out to them and met with them. But for having our own downtown partnership here and having good relationship with their executive director, sometimes I think things like that wouldn't necessarily happen. And I tell people all the time, you don't have to be the community development director to bring business to Cuyahoga Falls. You could be anyone. I had a woman contact me just yesterday who has a friend who I haven't met this person yet, who is an orthodontist in Egypt and wanted information about our city because he's thinking of moving here and having his business here locally. And he wanted to know a little bit more about what our position was on and how friendly the administration was towards having diverse and minority-owned businesses in our city. And I thought that was a very on-point, you know, valid question for someone to be asking, especially when you're relocating that far away. And I provided her with a whole slew of statistics and information, and she was impressed herself at how much we do and how much outreach we have for our minority-owned businesses. So, you know, I always look at things in terms of you just never know where connection's going to go. You just never know who's going to know somebody else. And if I brought one orthodontist here from Egypt, who knows how many other people he or knows who he would then be saying good things to about our city that he would bring here. So that you always have to think that there's far-reaching consequences of what you're doing. And I tell people when I give speeches, you know, if you have a connection with a business owner or someone who's not in Cuyahoga Falls, definitely tell them I exist. Send them my way. I'll reach out to them if you give me their contact information. You can reach out to them yourselves. Now, chains are different. You know, we get requests sometimes to bring Tim Hortons here, or somebody wants us to bring a Popeyes here, and they do things completely different. You don't just call up a chain and say, hey, why don't you come to Cuyahoga Falls? They all work through brokers, and they usually work through conferences and seminars throughout the year. So Fred and I went to an ICSC conference last year in Columbus, but they're not having those now, so we'll resume that again next year. But chains are pretty astute themselves of doing their own research, and they go around and they have these research firms who try to figure out where would be a good market for them. So you don't, I mean, in some sense, you don't have to reach out to a chain. They find you because they have a lot of little sticking points on what they're looking for. For example, you know, Target won't go somewhere where they're within 10 miles of another Target, you know, or some have to be, you know, within 500 yards of an expressway access. I mean, they're very particular on how they do things. Now, Portage Crossings is growing. They put on Portage Crossings North, which added some 9,000 square feet of additional retail space. But they did that themselves. You know, they don't come to us and help at all. They just go over there and make sure that they get their tenants. They find their national tenants. And I think the mix has been good. You see with Portage Crossings, you see chains. And at downtown, you see a lot of mom and pop individually owned businesses. And people, I think that's one of the reasons we've also been successful here, is because people have had that option. They could frequent the chains or not. They can go downtown. It's a total different atmosphere, total different vibe, and it works. So it's when I think of my job, I think of how I've got to be open to just providing a little bit of something for everybody. I can't myself just say, well, we're not going to have any chains in the city. We have enough chains. I don't say those kinds of things. Got to be open and responsive to what people want to have and what people want to hear. So we're always, always open to hearing and listening to more about what people want to have happen here. One of the things we're doing next is we're going to moving our efforts to revitalize the South State Road corridor, because we've been so successful downtown by incentivizing development there through matching facade grants, sign grants, holding events, that we want to take at least those three programs now to the South State Road corridor, so that the businesses from Portage Crossings south to the bridge can take advantage of some public money, some public funds to renovate the exteriors of their buildings, that we would help them do some branding, some logos, launch a Facebook page, host some events to bring some attention to that area of the city for the benefit of those business owners too.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are there any, well, I guess two questions, because I know you got to go. Are there any properties around the city that you would really like to see a business go into, like, that just stick out in your mind, like, man, we really got to get something in there? Like, in my mind, the first one I think of is the corner of Graham and Oakwood, the auto service center that's been sitting empty. And I know there's some complications with that when there's a little piece of that property that's owned by somebody and it's in probate or something in another state. So I know that one's a little complicated, but man, would I love to see something go in there, because it's right by my house also. So it's, you know, maybe a little selfish. So are there any properties like that that you'd like to see a business go into? And then is there anything coming to town that you know of for sure that just hasn't been well publicized that you wish more people knew about?
Well, I can never say for sure that something is guaranteed to happen, because I've been here long enough to see that something like COVID can strike and all of a sudden things are waylaid and banks freeze up and don't want to lend money and developers disappear. But I can tell you that our next project that I expect to see pop out of the ground will be owner-occupied townhomes on South Front Street, across from the area where you have Hi-Ho Brewery. We currently own an old gasoline station there on that area, South Front Street. And we're working with a developer to acquire the building next to it, which is an industrial building. And then those buildings would be demoed, and we'll see that pop out of the ground. Hopefully next year, by the end of next year, that's kind of the next thing on my radar. The mayor's big, big push right now also is what we refer to as Lot 107. That's the empty lot on Front Street next to the Cuyahoga Valley Art Center that sits between that building and the Portage Trail Bridge. There have been several developments that have come and gone that were proposed for that site, a hotel, condos. It's been a difficult site to develop because there's no real parking there. It's one of the reasons why last year we had gotten a proposal from a developer to build apartments on top of our publicly owned green deck across the street from that lot. And it didn't go anywhere. They were actually being a little greedy, a lot greedy. They wanted an abatement for 30 years at 100%. And the school board voted it down, rightly so. But what triggered that, though, and their request to go across the street and build on top of the green deck was that they'd have parking there. And it's hard to get a developer to commit to that other site because there's a parking issue. The ground there is rock solid. It's going to cost a lot of money if you want to dig a parking deck underneath and put it underneath a structure there. So there's challenges with that site. But we are still working through some of that. We've had conversations with someone who has ideas for that site. I can't say that that'll go next year, but I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed that it'll go the next year. And if it does, it's going to be really, really amazing how that will dress up that part of Front Street. And then the other thing is, and this isn't, you know, fun at all or exciting, but we still have industrial land on Cochrane Road that we would love to have developed. So we do talk to businesses from out of state that might want to come here and build an industrial complex on Cochrane Road. We need they would be considered then an end user, and we need an end user in order to legitimately go into debt to reconstruct Cochrane Road and to widen it and put in sewers along Cochrane Road. So that's big on my radar as well. And I'd love to know that before I leave here that something's happening over at Cochrane Road.
Are there incentives for actual like residents of Cuyahoga Falls to start businesses?
Yes, there are. We offer a tiered system of incentivizing new businesses. So, for example, if you start a new business here and you have to meet certain criteria, but if you do, we offer up to $10,000 matching grant that can assist with the purchase of equipment, working capital, inventory. And one of the criteria is that you have to create at least one part-time job for a person who is of low to moderate income. And we have yet to have somebody who couldn't do that. So that, yes, the answer is yes, we can help somebody create a new business here. If you move, or I'm sorry, if you are here already as a business and now you want to expand, we'll go up to $25,000 to help you with a matching grant to expand your business. And then if you're going to create mega jobs, we're all in. We're going to give you up to $50,000 matching grant. In some instances, if it's like jobs off the chart for years to come, we can go $100,000 economic development grant. We did that, for example, for Kyocera, who moved some 84 jobs from Monroe Falls to our city. They're in the process of doing it anyway. And we gave $50,000 to the Farmers Reel to create 12 new jobs here in our downtown district. We did not do a grant for Summit DD to relocate their 130 jobs here, but we purchased that adjacent property that was the former Amir Auto Dealership and did that so that we could have parking for those 130 people who would be working in that building during the day. And then that parking lot will be for our businesses in the evenings and on the weekends. So we try to find a way to yes. I like to be, I am a yes person. The mayor's a yes person. I like to think our administration starts with yes. And we try to get people where they need to go. Our team's pretty creative in coming up with solutions. And I think that's one of the reasons why they were so successful even before I came on the scene. And we all share that same philosophy. We want to work together. We want to get things done.
Awesome. Last question. It's a tough one. We have to ask everybody this, and I know you're not going to want to answer, but you got to help us out. What are some of your favorite businesses in town? Maybe just because it's where you go to get a cup of coffee or whatever.
Oh boy, I'm pretty boring. Most of my peers love to go up to Starbucks, but I got to tell you, I love On Tap. I love the coffee at Burger King. I will go through their drive-thru and get a coffee sometimes on my way to wherever I'm going. I have to say I love Dunkin' Donuts because that was my very first job was at a Dunkin' Donuts, the one on North Hill in Akron. So I still am very partial to their coffee and their donuts. And I love the Boulevard.
Oh, great. Love the Boulevard.
Love the Boulevard. That's one of my go-to places for sure.
Well, we got to get you some better coffee, but otherwise...
I'm not very picky, I guess, when it comes to my coffee.
Well, Diana Colavecchio, thank you so much for joining us on the Fallscast for this really long interview. We really appreciate your time, and we know that the people in the city are going to love to hear all about all the great stuff that you guys are doing there. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Alex. Have a great day, and you're doing good things here with this podcast. This is all really, really informative for our residents. I will encourage them myself when I speak to groups to listen in.
Awesome. Well, it's our pleasure, of course. Fallscast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.